Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the discussion today. We're specifically going to be talking about addiction, self-sabotaging behaviour, and just exploring that more deeply, just to see what our flavours of sabotage are and maybe some aspects that you might have necessarily clocked as sabotage. This is very much an opportunity to make things personal and relevant to what's happening with you in your life, and anyone else on this call will be able to relate to that in their own way as well. So please don't hold back and go for it with questions or topics or anything that's relative to what we're discussing. So I'd love to introduce Lucy Dahill. Lucy is a parent education and health and wellbeing advocate. Welcome, Lucy.
Thank you. Thank you, Katie. Lovely to be here.
Great. And I myself have worked in complementary medicine and also have a background in human resources on a corporate level. So we look forward to being with you for this next hour. So if we look at sabotage, Lucy, what does that mean to you?
Sabotage is that fantastic way that that you think you're on the right track. You think that you've made this amazing decision and you know what's going on and you've made a concerted effort to say, this is going to be my new normal. And then something happens that comes out of the blue that you haven't really thought about to try and take you off track. So an example might be you've decided that you are not going to get stressed anymore. You're going to allow more time. You're going to be more organized. And the first time you're going to practice that is when you're going to leave work on time and not stay late so that you can get home to pick the kids up at their normal time. So you're just about to finish work, you're tidying your desk, and someone comes to you and says, I need this work done. Can you do it now? And it's that bit where you all of a sudden have all the best laid plans and something or someone comes in and says, this needs to be done now. And it's out of your control. But also, Katie, I would say slightly in your control. Is that how you found it?
Yeah, and that's the sabotaging aspects, because it is, and we'll have such convenient excuses as to why we allow the behavior or activity, whatever it happens to be, and they'll sound logical, they'll sound, you know, justifiable, so to speak, but it actually is complete sabotage, just to even nudge us off track slightly or not following what's actually needed to support, so that you might be agitated and then you have that agitation for the rest of the evening if it's in the afternoon, et cetera, or that then can affect other people, et cetera. So I love to look at the subtleties of what sabotage is, because we're often used to the not so subtle sabotage, which could be, you know, if you know you drink too much alcohol, you wake up in the morning and you're not going to feel very good. So those are the aspects that we could be more aware of, or if you eat a whole lot of sugar, you're going to be racy, etc. But there's a whole different area to tap into. It could be as simple as being on a conversation for too long when you know you need to prepare for a meeting. So even just those few minutes extra is enough just to nudge you slightly so that you're not feeling fully connected to yourself, so to speak.
Yes, absolutely. And that nudge can be as subtle or as obvious as it needs to be for you to hear it or not hear it.
In the sense that you
might think it's not very important and ignore it, and that is the moment that took you off track an hour and a half later.
Yeah, so it's exploring what your flavors are in that. I know for me, it might be, I'll just reply to this one next email, or I'll just photocopy this so that I've got that ready, or I'll just make that quick call, whatever it happens to be. When I fully had a feeling that I need to be focusing on something else, or that preparation's needed, et cetera. So even though it may just be 3 minutes, that's just enough, because it can be really subtle and not just the obvious aspects.
Are there other ways that sabotage can come in?
Yeah, so through people, the same as we can do that ourselves. You know, it could be that you might see a phone call that comes through and you can feel that's going to need some extra time, whoever it happens to be on the other end of the phone, or it might be a conversation that you feel is going to be a bit needy or draining, etc. So again, it's your response. When do you respond to that phone call? Is it taking it then and there, which then may have a repercussion, or sensing what's needed with that and then choosing to call them on your lunch break or later? So just as we can do that to ourselves with our flavors of sabotage, sensing when that's coming from other people just to nudge us off track as well.
So it sounds to me like it would be really worth setting expectations and letting people know what your parameters of work are so that the expectations are clear. For example, I have childcare that I need to pick up, therefore I have to leave at 5 o'clock. So if we are going to have a meeting or you do need to talk to me, please make sure that it's before 4:30. Or if it's 6 o'clock, you have to leave, that you allow time and that the people who you're working on your projects with know the parameters of your availability so that their bad organization doesn't actually impact on yours.
And what I really sense when you're talking then, Lucy, was, yeah, how much are we respecting what is needed to support? Because people will impose or dump on if we're not living that ourselves. And it's not talking about perfection here, and there needs to be a certain amount of flexibility, absolutely. But to what level do we, you know, be that fixer person, always available, always responding then and there? Then that sets an expectation from others to continue that behavior more so. Because you'll know there's people that, in the office example, that they just don't get those requests. And it might be, why are people coming to me for that all the time? Or, you know, I'm just as busy, et cetera. So it's going, well, how am I being with myself? So that sets that foundation that you're talking about with a certain amount of flexibility, but not to the stage where it's stressing you or draining you, or that you're not able to complete what you know is important to complete that day.
So it might be ensuring that there's more than one person in your team who knows how to do something. So it might be about upskilling someone else in something that you do so that you're not the most important person or the only person who can do that. And, you know, sometimes there are things that only we can do, but more often than not, there is that ability to share skills and so that we empower a team and therefore can make sure that we could leave on time. That's a possibility too, eh? Mm-hmm.
I think that's really effective in business management, and that's where stress, that can really reduce a team's stress level, is that you have that contingency plan, that it's not just totally relying on one person, or if there's a bottleneck that continues to be happening, to assess that and go, okay, well, what are some other ways? How can we structure this a little bit differently? And you can manage that within your own role, which sets an example as well, or even take that to management with suggestions, because you're in that role, you're seeing what's happening, you're seeing what's impacting you. So these are definitely everything we're talking about. They're subtle layers of sabotage. Anything that's causing a bottleneck, anything that's causing stress, it's just looking at what's contributing to me feeling this way and what other opportunities are there.
Fabulous. Fabulous. The other one I felt was claiming your space in the what you're going to say no to and what you're not going to say no to, that there's an owning of your own decision making here.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose if we really pull this apart, we can say, well, why do we sabotage? Because it doesn't really make sense. If we know it causes stress, it causes a repercussion that's not positive in our body, if we look at that and if we're honest with ourselves, we'll have that aspect of ourselves that wants to support, which knows what does support. And then there's that other aspect of ourselves that just goes, you know what, I've had a big day, I need a bit of a reward, and not actually assessing, is that reward going to support us, be it food, be it checking out in front of TV at night for too long when you really should be in bed. You know, that voice or that impulse where you go, look, I know that doesn't support me, but you know what, I'm just going to do it. And then the more we get in relationship with that, the more we're actually going to see what our flavors of sabotage actually are, because they can change. They can change with your age. They can change with your circumstances. If you've been single and then you go into a relationship, even though you may really want to be in a relationship, there's still sabotage that can come in to affect the intimacy in that relationship. Or, you know, with our kids, we absolutely want to be a good parent. But then what are the behaviours that come in to sabotage us being that parent that we want to be? So it's no different to like a two-year-old. When you're having to discipline, you're having to set a good example, you know that everything in their body from a cellular level wants to support. They don't like being in trouble and they don't like not being respected, etc. But we've still got that in us as adults. Yeah, we're not necessarily living in a way, because it can be more subtle, we're good at masking it, to go, how am I sabotaging myself? Or, you know, what's getting in the way? Each new year I might set myself goals, etc., and then the next year I'm still in the same place, etc. So I've definitely been working with this lately, and I'm seeing things that I didn't even realize was sabotage, which is super cool.
Yeah, I'm learning from what you're sharing right there in terms of relationships and how you can not see them as related. So something can happen on one day and then a week later, this can have laid a foundation for something a week later to come and disturb us.
Yeah, and anything that we avoid, it cycles back, doesn't it? That's what I was sensing from what you're saying, is that avoiding having that conversation with our partner or with our colleague or with our manager, the tension that builds, that is a form of sabotage. Because you're then having to live with something that's not resolved or something that hasn't been expressed, that hasn't been brought up, so you can actually both go to a deeper level with either working together or in your relationship or with our kids or friends, no matter what it happens to be. So if we're not responding to that day-to-day tension that's actually showing us something needs to be dealt with, then it's deliberate, and even though it might be subconscious, sabotage, because it's adding a layer of stress that you've got to work with day by day by day. And then you take that to your sleep as well, because it's unresolved. And it doesn't mean that you have to get a resolution. It's more if you're sensing you need to address something and you don't, it doesn't matter if the other person agrees to you with you or not. At least you're doing your bit with what you can feel from your body and providing the opportunity there. And that in itself reduces your stress.
You know, I can't help feeling a practical example might be really good here. So I can only think of one around the home. So perhaps you might be able to think of one around the office. But if you are coming home and your teenagers might have been home for a little while before you, and then you get in and you're expected to make the dinner, or you might be expected to come in and then do a whole load of preparation for the evening from when you get home. But if everybody has been home and you walk in and everyone's on television, devices, doing their own thing and having a great time, but the dishwasher hasn't been unpacked, the stuff in the sink, there's food left out on the surfaces, if you don't have that conversation, that just builds up in you and it is something that sabotages the relationship, because you are not having the conversation that you need to have. Therefore, you go to work stressed, you dread coming home because there's so much to do, and it builds and it builds and it builds. And then there's a massive explosion, but actually it started 2 months ago.
And then it doesn't provide opportunity for change. So, you know, that's where often people will go, oh, well, that's teenagers. But that behavior isn't necessarily teenage. It's just that a lot of kids that age may be doing that behavior. But everyone knows, you know, what a supportive environment is. So if it's not addressed, then it does become teenage behavior, so to speak, because so many of those conversations aren't happening. And we're talking about teenagers at the moment, but that can be exactly the same in the workplace, because you start to feel your arrangements in your relationships as well. And it might be that someone at work is going to react if you bring it up, so you avoid bringing it up, whatever it happens to be up.
Yeah.
And then you've got that tension day to day to day, but it's not providing an opportunity for them to change. And then you're getting the repercussions of what's not right or what's not flowing. But it doesn't give them an opportunity to shift, and that tension's still there anyway, and it'll come out in a reaction in one way or another. Mm. So sometimes it is just going there and sharing what's needed, and then you can sense whether someone's open to it or not. But it is absolutely a form of sabotage to the effectiveness in business or in our relationships on all different levels.
So there's a level of comfort, isn't there, that goes along with not speaking up? Because that seems to be what we're talking about right now, is when you speak up about something that doesn't feel right, or you know that something needs to be said, but you don't say it. There is it's almost like an abdication of your responsibility, but then that's a self-sabotage, because you're setting yourself up to actually dread that meeting every time it comes round, and that person's going to be in the room with you. You sabotage yourself before you even get in the room and in the meeting, because you're going to have a whole load of issues that you want to say that are building up. So when you finally do speak up, potentially it's going to come with a tsunami of other stuff that actually wasn't related when you finally open your mouth.
Yeah, spot on. And then we're not actually getting away with anything. So we think we're avoiding or not having to feel someone's reaction, but we're actually feeling it. Because exactly like you said, it comes out in our body language, in our expression, or someone might just have a feeling that person doesn't like me, because there's something there that very much can be felt tangibly. So it's a big one, isn't it? And I was just thinking, I suppose if we look at our relationships, be it with a partner, husband, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever that happens to be, we can know each other's soft spots, so to speak. So there's either an avoidance of going there or having that conversation, setting a framework within your relationship that there's more of that openness, or developing a space where you can both feel safe to take things to deeper levels as well. Because otherwise that affects not only us, but our kids, and being role models. If we're avoiding things, kids can definitely sense that.
Yes, kids are more honest. They're going to say it. If you're avoiding something, they're likely to go there. Whereas someone in a meeting is likely to not go there. They're just likely to leave the room and moan to someone else, in my experience.
Yeah. And then I suppose also it's great to look at, well, how do we support each other in that sabotage? Because I know when my husband was trying to give up chocolate, and I don't eat chocolate, but he'd buy a bigger block and then come home and say, oh, do you want some chocolate? And you sure you don't want some chocolate?
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't want some chocolate. And keep asking me. So then it's to the point where it's like, how many times are you going to ask me? So, you know, it doesn't make sense on so many levels. But he knew that, you know, if I was more consistent with that, then that's a marker for him to feel where he was sabotaging, and it just happened to be with chocolate. But, you know, we're quite tricky, or even with kids, you know, if they're doing something a bit naughty and they know they shouldn't, you try and rope other people in so that you're not just the one, and if you're going to get in trouble, that shares it around, et cetera. And you can be playful with it too, as we were with the chocolate, just to say, you know, do you realise that you do this and this is what happens, et cetera? So what if we start supporting each other more to point out when we're doing those behaviours? So, yeah, we've been exploring that, and it's been really supportive.
I really like the picture you've got for this episode, which is, you know, a gazillion cupcakes with a mouthful out of one of them, because there is an, you know, when we find we've got self-sabotaging behaviors, the chances are there's an addiction underneath it. So we've got to take a step back and say, okay, if I keep sabotaging myself, what is it that I need out of what I'm doing? What is it helping me do that means I don't want to let go of it? Because if you can start to understand why you're using the behavior, where you're eating the food, why you're watching TV, and as much as you said, I'm going to go to bed at 10 o'clock, you end up still sitting there, in fact, asleep on the sofa at midnight. If you can understand why you're doing what you're doing or avoiding what you want to do, then it just opens up a whole world of freedom that means you actually have the potential to choose differently. Whereas if you just use your willpower to say, I won't do that anymore, you're setting yourself up for failure, because your willpower will crack and you will give in to that cupcake that's sitting there talking to you from the tea urn.
Yeah, I love it. Absolute gold what you're offering, because that's why so many people struggle with diets. Diets not working in themselves in that sense, or they'll get to a certain point because it is founded on the motivation from willpower. But it does open up a whole new level when it's like, well, why am I craving that? Why tonight? Or am I thinking about what I can have after dinner, dessert-wise? Whereas last night, didn't have a single thought about having dessert. So it's going back into your day to go, what wasn't right? So then I'm craving sugar now. And ultimately, when we have sugar, then we're not having to feel certain aspects. It has a very quick effect in the body. And it could even be that, yeah, you went to bed too late the night before, or it could be how you were working was very task-oriented of just focusing, completing, and you weren't necessarily nurturing your body. You maybe didn't have the breaks you needed to go to the bathroom, get water, whatever it happens to be. So when we're feeling those thoughts of wanting to sabotage, basically, that's great, Lucy. It's looking back to go, what is contributing to this? Because that's more a side effect of something else that's happened.
There is a physical reason and there's a psychological reason. And it just is so good to spend time and work out, why do I psychologically want to do what I'm doing? And then also, there is sometimes a need to address a physical dependence on something. Sugar is a really great example of a substance that's highly addictive. So to try and come off that needs a stepped approach. You can't just stop it, because the chances are you're pretty tired, and so you're using the sugar to keep you awake, and therefore if you stop it altogether, you will be asleep at your desk, you won't be able to concentrate. There are withdrawal symptoms to consider here. You know, you can't go into a meeting and not be clear and on it and ready to go. So there is so much love that you need to bring, and self-care that you need to bring to a plate that's looking at self-sabotaging behaviors.
Yeah, and the many different flavors that comes in. It's quite diverse, isn't it? So I just wanted to open up and just ask, for those participating, share with us, what have you connected to during this conversation? What can you see are aspects that are very sabotaging? Have you got anything in particular that you'd like to bring forward as to your personal experience with sabotage?
Then please don't. Any addiction?
Go for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell us about your addictions.
One that I've definitely been feeling lately is I'm not really into social media as such. And then this pull before going to bed just to check social media reel. And it's just like, why? That's not been something that I've done. But I know when I do that, then I'm not bringing a level of care that I know my body actually needs in preparing for bed. So it's just really interesting just to go, why suddenly is there this pull to want to go and look at that at this time of night when really I need to be in bed?
I was reading a research paper just yesterday about how people change their patterns of behavior, how to sort of address a diet when a diet doesn't work, or the yo-yo of a diet. And they were talking about the relationship we make between two things. And I feel that that's part of what you're talking about here. So, for example, when you are sitting at your desk for a very long time and you go and make a cup of tea, if you're very used to having a biscuit with that cup of tea, you know that when you leave your desk and walk to the kitchen area, you know what you're coming back with. You're planning it. It's just part of your makeup. You're heading down there. You know what your routine is. So part of the way to look and address that is to change your routine. So walk a different way to the kitchen, or come and sit down in a different way, or use a different cup, so that you're whole body and the movements of your body change, so that you are able to consider a different choice when you finally get to the place where you're going to decide whether you're going to have your biscuit or not, because there's a different body been taken there. And I thought that was quite an interesting thing to play with.
Yeah, definitely. And how often we're just in autopilot mode as well, rather than just letting us connect, sense what's needed and follow through. So it's easy. It's like I get up in the morning, this is what I do, this is what I do next, this is what I do after that. But what if your day actually entails different aspects? So you might need to prepare in a different way for that day too. That's a form of sabotage, not sensing what's actually needed. And, you know, it could be as simple as you just normally go to the cupboard, grab whatever is in front of you, or do we allow that deeper care that when you're selecting your clothes for the day, what colour shirt do you feel like wearing? What kind of fabric do you feel like having in your skin, rather than that autopilot approach to actually, we've got options all the time. And, you know, how you feel one day might vary to another day.
Yeah, look, I think it's so important to have some just that moment of what are my choices and how much choice do I have, and, you know, can I change it up a little bit? Can I drive home a different way? Can I walk up the stairs rather than take the lift?
Absolutely, because there's a lot of our day that has a certain structure to it, and in our jobs that has certain requirements. So you can feel there isn't much choice in that, but there is many different subtle choices that you might not think are making a big difference, but they absolutely do. And if you're presenting one day, or if you're holding a meeting, you know, what clothes are going to support you, rather than, oh, that shirt's clean, I'm just going to grab that. Or exactly as you say, Lucy, I drive this way to work every day. But, you know, are you actually feeling which way to drive to work? And that might support you better with traffic and all those different factors as well. So being on autopilot is definitely a form of sabotage. And most of us would fall into that. And often when you've had a busy day and you go home from work, do we greet our kids in autopilot? Or do we consciously go, you know what, I'm going to be present, I'm going to listen, even though I've got dinner to prepare, I've got the house to clean, I've got to help with assignments, whatever it happens to be, am I actually available? And all those things, yes, they matter, but not at a compromise to actually being there, connecting. Even if it's a few minutes that you're with your kids, that you're connecting with them, that makes up for hours of so-called quality time, because they can feel you're actually listening and you're actually present.
It's very true. Top tip, I talk to a lot of teenagers, and the thing that they say to me the most, and this is from year 7 all the way through to year 12, is that their parents don't actually listen. They think they're listening, but they're not actually listening. And that was really humbling for me, because, of course, I think I'm an amazing listener, to suddenly go, I wonder if I actually can go to a more conscious way of listening to you. Perhaps this is your way of saying to me, adults in general aren't very good at listening. And maybe rather than get defensive and say, well, I'm really good at listening, I could say, okay, well, maybe there is a better way. Maybe I'm addicted to always coming up with a solution, and perhaps my addiction needs to be addressed by going, what if I just sit on my hands, keep my lips shut, and use my ears, my two ears, rather than my one mouth, to be present in this situation. So what are our addictions? They might be subtle ones rather than the really obvious ones.
Yeah, I totally relate to what you're saying. I do feel, as adults especially, we're poor listeners across the board, and not allowing that space to really just listen, because we're so quick to come in with the solutions, because we're not wanting to feel the tension of maybe of what's being offered or what's being discussed. So to alleviate that, straight into the solutions focused, or even that saves time if you're rushing, etc. But then how are we actually developing or offering a space to develop our kids when we are in that solution mode?
I'd love to offer another couple of addictions. What about being addicted to stress? So as much as you say you're stressed and you want help, how addicted are we to actually not changing?
And the same with anxiety as well, you know, and living in your nervous system, not liking that feeling, and because it's a tension, but it's just been a way of living with life that becomes so common and so normal, not even realizing that we are so used to that, etc., or addicted to that. So even if there's no drama in our life, starting to create drama, starting to create issues, or magnifying things so that it might be something we can work with, but then it gets magnified. So it's this huge issue which we focus on. That's big.
Yeah, and that again will come from us listening to our own way of communicating in how much drama we talk about and how we've always had, oh, the worst weekend, or oh my gosh, you won't believe what happened to me. You know, we can hear maybe the way we speak, or maybe we're addicted to not standing out, in which case we might say, oh no, your voice is quiet, you don't want to disturb anyone, you're constantly apologizing. That we have maybe addictive behaviors that sabotage us in our movement through the corporate world, and might, you know, just in our in the way we are in general.
So it's a good opportunity just to have a few moments now to reflect, maybe jot down, that's often quite handy, what your flavors of sabotage are, how you see it in your relationships, whether it is focusing on aspects like we've just been talking about that then become issues, even if it's something that you might be very capable of dealing with, and then seeing if there happens to be a pattern with that day to day. You know, you might wake up, things are fine, and then suddenly you'll have something to focus on as an issue versus when you're feeling that aspect starting to magnify, just step back, reflect on it, and go, actually, what's needed here? And it might be something that just needs to be addressed then and there, so it doesn't become this big issue, or looking at it from a different perspective as well. And just to, yeah, have a look at what's causing you stress at the moment, what's distracting you at the moment, which varies from person to person with what's going on for us at the time.
Very good. Well worth jotting a few things down.
And the more we start to do this, then the more we're able to see those patterns in other people as well. So it's just like a family, if you're living in that anxiety or nervous tension, so you come home and it's quick, but to do this, you know, next, rather than providing a bit of stillness or time to unwind, it kind of gets a little bit contagious too. So I started to look at myself and what those flavors were, and then I was able to see the kids that had adopted a few of those unsupportive things as well. But it wasn't until we start to work on it ourselves that then you can provide a space for them to choose something else too.
Yeah, there's a real role modeling, isn't there, that I'm hearing you talking about, Katie, that we can focus on the self-sabotaging behaviors and the addictions, but that's what we then mentor to the people around us, whether they're in our team or in our homes and our families, that there is an opportunity to bring a refreshing level of honesty that isn't about saying that you're going to be perfect and you're never going to do something again, but an ability to just be open to looking at what your list might be, what might have jotted down on your piece of paper as things that actually are possible to change, but things that you can see are sabotaging what you want out of your day to day. So for me, it might be actually, I would like to make sure that I don't feel rushed. How do I not feel rushed all the time? Okay, so maybe my planning is not right. Maybe it's the short term, the medium term, or the long term planning. Not just saying all my planning is wrong, but look at what part of my planning. Where are the long term meetings I'm putting in? Where are the medium ones, and where are the last minute ones that are coming in and actually putting the stress on my diary and on me, and perhaps on other people? And also recognizing that sometimes the planning is where you can really lay some seeds that give you space in your day to not change them.
Yeah, rushing is huge. Even if it's 5 minutes or so that you know you should have been somewhere, you know, 5 minutes earlier, and then how you've got to kind of work with yourself to steady yourself if you're feeling rushed. And I think in today's modern world, you know, if time was a commodity that we could purchase, it would be highly sought after because people are feeling so time poor.
Yeah, and we've had a question about asking how do we truly change sabotaging behavior such as living constantly in nervous tension. It's such a good question because that word tension is what you want to spot. You want to spot that there is a tension, and that is almost the very first step to recognizing that something, you know, that something's going wrong. So if I give the idea of that diary, Katie, can you have a think about what you might say, you know, in terms of what your experience is? For me, it was actually saying, to start off with, I do not want to live with that nervous tension all the time. And doing an audit, which takes time. So you need to just create that space within your day. It might be 2 hours one afternoon where you take yourself off and you sit in a room and you've got a big piece of paper around you and you start looking at what you've committed to. And then you start looking at some priorities around what is a priority, your high, medium, and low priority. What can only you do? What could someone else do? What could you skill someone else up to do? And start looking at what you really want to commit yourself to and what actually you could potentially pass to someone else so that you give yourself space, because with space, you will address some of the nervous tension that you've taken as normal. I find breaking it down is the only way to do it, because the overwhelm and the nervous tension comes from it being too big and it feeling too big to manage. So if I can break it down into bite-sized pieces, then I can address it in even smaller bite-sized pieces, at which point I start understanding how on earth I got to live with so much nervous tension. Because you can see the build-ups.
And that's beautiful, Lucy, because it can feel so big. And because so many people, like, it's really an epidemic. If I look at clinic and sessions, you know, there's rarely a person that doesn't say, I'm feeling anxious, or especially overwhelmed or time poor at the moment with how we're all living. It's a significant aspect, and also realizing that often with anxiety or overwhelm or anxiousness, it can be a behavior that we've been brought up in as well. So you mightn't see it in your parents when you were young, but definitely as you get older, you can start to see those traits in your parents. And it is something, like we were saying before, it can be infectious, so to speak, that you're seeing an adult when you're little respond in a certain way. So it becomes a learnt behavior too. And then even just that, realizing it, because I started to see it, and my mum won't mind me saying that, she stayed with us recently and I didn't realize how anxious she was. And we started talking about it and I said, you know, Mum, everything you're feeling, those are symptoms of anxiousness. And she was saying, oh, I didn't really think I was an anxious person, but it was quite significant. And through the conversation, she started to feel more the anxiety there. And then, as you said, when you're feeling that tension, that's when you can really work with it. That's gold. Because if you just think it's you and you think that's how you need to be in life, how can we change that? How can we offer another way of living with ourselves? So it's like, what's your relationship with that tension that you feel? And I wanted to ask everyone, with the list that you had and when you were jotting down what your flavors of sabotage were, how did you react to that? You know, did you give yourself a hard time, or did you not like exposing yourself in that way? Did it make you feel uncomfortable? Did you have a judgment of any type? Because that's what's been capping us to see more of the sabotage. And really, it's extremely liberating to work with yourself this way, to go, I don't want to have that tension on. I want to be in relationship with myself so that I can really start to drop the criticism and the perfectionism and realize that all of that you're feeling is actually gold, because then you can start to work with it.
Oh, it's so beautiful. We have to be so kind to ourselves, to support ourselves, because when you feel that you want to address it, you actually have to look honestly at how much you've fed it. And that can be really humbling, because personally, and I can only share from my personal experience, I really wanted to blame everybody else for creating this drama in my life. And I work with young people predominantly, and a lot of them, you can see them creating these dramas and these problems for themselves, but they're blaming their parents. And when I work with the parents, they're creating a whole load of drama for themselves, but they're blaming the children. And you know, I could see that I had done the same, you know, in my life. So it's that ability to go, okay, hold on one second. I am far more powerful in my life than actually I've given myself credit for. I have far more control, and therefore I can turn that into being the change that I want to see in my life. And that's very empowering. It's very beautiful, but we need to hold our hands when we first come to that realization, because it can be a slightly unnerving place to start.
Yeah, and to start to see, well, that's the only way for us to heal. It's like we either avoid it and we stay in that, you know, judgment place towards ourselves or not wanting to be honest. But whatever we're not allowing ourselves to feel, then we can't actually work with it. We're in a stubbornness and we're being held. And I just keep feeling, you know, if we happen to be parents or carers or whatever that happens to be, or even as a role model in our friendships, someone's got to go first with that too. And I remember when I met someone who was very honest with herself that way, and very much working with the what wasn't her, and there was no judgment there. And it was awesome, because I went, yeah, I want that. That's beautiful. I can feel what she's offering herself in that. So as far as parenting, you're doing it in the way that's actually a lived experience, and then it isn't an extra chore to have to offer these things to your kids, because you're offering that, just you and yourself in your day-to-day. There's nothing there to teach. They get to see that. When I reflect on when I started feeling more of that nervous tension in my body, I just started asking, well, what am I reacting to? You know, what's the trigger here? And you can learn a lot from that, as to, you know, what you've absorbed from other people, the environment you're in. So it's not necessarily just how you are with yourself, but how you're reacting to your environment, what's going on, if there's tension in others, etc. All of that, if you're absorbing that, is directly impacting your nervous system. So it's a way of sabotage in itself if we are being affected by everything around us, rather than developing that relationship with ourselves, so that we're able to hold steady in that more and observe what's going on around us rather than absorbing it, then, you know, you're going to be a lot more present as well.
Can you hear me now, Katie?
Yep, you're back.
What I was going to share was that this Parents at Work program's pretty cool, because there are all sorts of areas that you can get support for, so many aspects. And I just wonder, this is just one of many things that your company might be offering you, but really investigate where you can, who's supporting who with what, and what you can try out, because we do think that we do it all on our own, and we might think that no one can understand our point of view or where we're coming from, or ours is more complicated than everyone else. But if we actually go out there and see what's available, then we might be really surprised, and it might be something that the company already pays for that you can have access to. And again, by you showing you doing it, you inspire other people to go, you know what, I could do that. I've seen the changes in you. They're amazing.
Just listening to you mention support, Lucy, I mean, that's a great flavor of sabotage. And I've heard this from many people, just, you know, saying, I just don't have support. And that may be true on one level, but how are we setting things up so that we don't feel that we've got the support? Because how open are we also to accepting support? Does it have to come from certain people that we feel safe for that support to come from? Are we opening ourselves up to having support from areas or people that we may not have approached, etc.? So that in itself is definitely a sabotage, to feel that you have to do it yourself, that you have to do it the hard way, that it's only you. And that's why I loved when you were talking about, you know, doing that list and of everything that could be overwhelming. Well, how much of that do you actually have to do yourself? Can you get support from others with those aspects? And there'll be a little voice that'll go, no, I've just got to do it myself, or no, you know, no one's going to be able to do that, or oh, I don't really know if I trust someone to do that. And that's quite revealing in itself, just to break that down a little bit, because we are actually setting ourselves up to feel as though we've got no support.
Yeah, brilliant. The support question's a really big one. the really big one. I was talking to a couple of young people the other day about issues they were having in their lives. I had an image of them thrashing about in water, and you know, they were feeling like they were drowning. And I've seen this with parents as well. It's like, I just don't know where to start or how to get in control of this. But because they were thrashing about so much, they actually couldn't see or feel that they were in the shallow end, and or they were near the shore, and all they needed to do was stand up and just feel that the ground was there to support them, let alone the people that were the lifeguards that were standing around but couldn't get close because there was so much thrashing around. And it was, when I explained it to them in that way, they actually realized that if they just surrendered a little bit to not reacting quite so much, then the support that was there could actually come and find them, or they could find it. But there was a responsibility to stop thrashing around first.
Being in it, you've actually got to pause so that you can see another option. So it just goes to show, doesn't it, the many flavors of sabotage and how they've kind of dominated to a much greater extent than maybe what we'd first been aware of.
Yeah, because I thought we were talking, I mean, I thought about sabotage, I thought, oh, diets and food, but you know, relationships fit in there. Yeah, they are the easier ones. They're more in our faces, aren't they?
And I'm sure we're getting to the nitty-gritty here, people.
Yeah, we can pretend it's all about a diet, but that's just such a furphy. It's such rubbish. We've got to go into relationships. We've got to go into that relationship with others, with our family and with ourselves, and really just embrace the whole potential of even looking at this topic and what could come out of it.
And I think neediness also comes in as quite a flavor of sabotage as well, and it can be very, very subtle. So not that obvious neediness, but it might just be that, you know, when you feel something, you'll want to pick up the phone and always go to one person to talk about it. And it could be that that one person actually is able to be objective and offer some good advice, or it could be that that person you're going to is propping you up so that you can feel better in that moment, versus going deeper with yourself to explore what had just happened.
And hello, I can so relate to that one. And how often do we go and ask the people that actually we've got maybe two people that we could ask, and we go to the person who's going to say exactly what we want to hear? Because if we go to the other one, they might say what we don't want to hear, which might actually be the one that makes the change, that means that we don't have to experience it again. Oh my goodness, that is, yeah, that's
Patrick
a bit of an awkward, yeah,
total setup.
yeah, and we're so complicit in it. It's awkward turtle moment.
Yeah, absolutely. So I suppose that's a good one that we can start exploring a little bit more. Is what are your go-tos in moments of stress, or when you felt hurt by someone? You can even look at our relationship with our kids. Is there, if you're feeling a certain emotion with yourself, will you want to have a conversation with one child, let's say, because you can go into fix it mode and then feel better within yourself, or what that happens to be, rather than having, as you say, just that awkward moment of going, okay, what have I just learned now? What has that interaction shown me, as uncomfortable as I'm feeling? What didn't I express? What did I hold back with? Or what did I take personally, when actually maybe it wasn't personal at all, but because of whatever hurts happened previously, that's come into that discussion with that person. And maybe we thought they looked at us funny or raised their voice, etc., but maybe other stuff's coming into it. So that's a big sabotage one in itself.
Yeah, we have huge expectations when we're talking or listening. When we're talking and we're sharing, we have a picture of what we sound like, and we think that we're clear as anything. We think we're very clear about how we're feeling. We think we're very clear about how we're asking. But in fact, it's about how the message and the question and the request is received. And we don't know what the receive is hearing and seeing and connecting to, because we don't know what's gone on in their life before they've got there. So just as on Facebook, we can put up this amazing front of being fabulous and great and feeling fantastic, but behind the scenes, there might be quite a lot going on. When we're sharing with someone, we might think that we're sharing with someone who's got all the time in the world because they're so organized, it looks great. But behind that facade, they may be just holding it together. And you wanting to talk for 20 minutes or half an hour about something that is in their minds much less serious than what they've got going on in their lives might mean that you get a response that is blunt or unkind or short, sharp, and certainly not what you expected. And it, you might then go, oh, well, you see, that's why I don't ask for help. But you haven't discerned, one, how you shared what you shared and whether or not that person, as you shared, Katie, is in a position that they can help you or not.
And that's where we read so much into situations. And then I suppose that, I mean, that's a form of sabotage. If you have had an interaction or exchange that didn't feel quite right and it keeps coming back to you, playing in your head, you know, creating a worry, sometimes it's just picking up the phone and saying, look, you know, is everything cool? I just felt a bit of tension there. Anything that you felt coming from me, or of course it depends on the situation, but just by taking that responsibility and having that conversation, if it keeps reoccurring or that tension's definitely not just a one-off, then it just clears things too. So there's a whole new opportunity.